The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Well, welcome back, everyone, and I'm pleased to say that we have made our international connection, so to speak, with the 6th International Conference of Information Commissioners that is being held right now, coincidentally, perhaps not, because it is International Right to Know Day and Week, in Oslo, Norway. And they have just had their first full day of proceedings, being 6 hours ahead of us. And there are some who say that transparency in Norway is ahead of the United States now anyway. But 6 hours ahead of us, and they're about to proceed to their evening event, which is a reception, I believe, at City Hall in Norway. And we're very pleased to have with us, in this first of a kind type of event for International Right to Know Day here in the United States, the host commissioner, Commissioner Arne Fliflet of Norway, and also I believe we have on the line Kevin Dunyan, who is the information commissioner for Scotland, who was referred to in Professor Roberts' opening keynote presentation. So first let me say to the two of these guests who have been so kind to take the time to join us, welcome to this celebration of International Right to Know Day here in Washington, D.C.
Thank you very much.
It looks like the conference phone element is working quite well here. Arne, is that you?
That's me. It was Kevin saying a few words first, and this is Arne here.
Arne? Again, let me extend a very deep appreciation to you, because I know what it's like, or I can imagine what it's like, to have to plan a program such as this to host the 6th ICIC, and for you to take time out of your first day like that is a real plus and a testament to the importance of celebrating International Right to Know Day in a very international way such as this is.
Well, thank you very much for your kind words. As you said, we have just finished the conference first day, and we're going to a reception in the City Hall, as you said. And I have seen that your program, you haven't had lunch yet. So, as I see the program, you have many interesting topics on your agenda. We have had a lot of interesting discussions today with good interventions from several people from academia and also from our commissioner of work.
Yes. Well, let me say this. We're very proud and pleased of the other parts of our program, but nothing quite competes with this segment of it, in which we're connecting with you in a very timely fashion. Let me ask you just a general question, and this is about as general as it could be. How's it going, Arne?
How's it going? Excellent, I think. I hope so. It has been very exciting to prepare this conference. We have participants from all over the world, we have been through this day. I think Kevin perhaps could make comments on what his impression is of the first day of the conference.
remember, Arne, that when you and I were at the fourth International Conference of Information Commissioners, when I was representing the United States in Manchester, England, in 2006, I gave a speech in which I referred to our friend from Sweden as the grandfather, or perhaps the great-grandfather, of freedom of information. I'm trying to recall, his name is Kell, if I remember correctly.
Yes, Kjell Sundström, and he's here as well on this conference, together with two of his ombudsman colleagues.
Yes, and I must tell you that when I called him a great-grandfather, he said he didn't realize he looked quite that old at the time. He's got to be a little bit older looking now, but he still is entitled to the recognition that you and I both have given him. Let me also say on a personal note, I remember very well in Manchester that when we had the big dinner of the program in the, I guess it was the owner's box of the Manchester United soccer or football stadium, where we had what was called a stunning view of the pitch, you were very kind enough to explain to my wife much about the operations of the Norwegian governmental system. And I really had the impression at the time that the next ICIC, or the one after that, would be in Norway. So I was not at all surprised that you took on the task, the enormous task of being the host this year.
Well, Kevin, perhaps you should say a few words about your impression of the first day.
Kevin, before you do, let me just reiterate to our audience that the UK Freedom of Information Act is one that applies to the England and Scotland, England and Northern Ireland and Wales, and to Scotland only to a degree, but Scotland does have its entire separate Freedom of Information Act that covers most of transparency there, and it's such an active matter there that now the University of Dundee has established this year the second center on international transparency, the second academic center at any law school in the world, at Dundee Law School, and you are very actively involved in that as well, I know. You're, I think, co-director of that in your capacity as Information Commissioner.
Yeah, that's right, Darren. Thank you very much for the invitation to speak to your event today. I think the important thing about these International Commissioners conferences is that we're able to share some of the issues that are emerging. The Parliament FOI Act, I think, well, that's it. And clearly it isn't it. So, for example, we discussed today that the French government, when it passed its FOI Act, it imagined that information held in paper form, physically held by a public authority. Now, of course, how do we now cope with that FOI Act being out of date in respect of information no longer physically held in electronic form, and perhaps held in a central server. So we're examining, as international commissioners, the challenges to FOI, the challenges of things like technology, the challenges of issues like intellectual property and copyright, which might defy freedom of information, and the challenges of privacy and personal data, and the safeguards that are required for that.
That's very interesting, Kevin. The first thing you mentioned with respect to the old world of paper and the new world of electronic information, that has strong echoes for what we went through in the United States, because when our Freedom of Information Act was enacted in 66, and even when it was heavily amended in 1974 and then again in 1986, no one on Capitol Hill here or in the civil society, non-government organization, public interest community envisioned the world in which we soon thereafter began to live. And that required amendments here, major amendments, to our FOIA in 1996, called the Electronic Freedom of Information Amendments, which basically dragged our law, kicking and screaming, so to speak, into the 20th, if not the 21st century. So that was a major issue here, and I'm not surprised to hear that it's something that you've been focusing on, perhaps to the advantage of newer nations that have newer, more nascent regimes of transparency as well.
Well, that's right. And of course, we can also learn from those newer countries, because The country which passed legislation in the 60s and the 70s, like yours, like New Zealand and Canada, and they are the country that we look to, but we try to build upon. So the more newer nations, and we've got countries here like Papua New Guinea and countries from the Caribbean, Barbados and so on, from Papua Macedonia in Eastern Europe, who are new to this game, but we can learn from them. For example, your audience might be interested to know that in India, we have one of the Indian commissioners here. He has the power to fine individual civil servants if they don't give out information. He doesn't worry about going to court, doesn't worry about issuing a long decision. If the civil servant has been found to be the person who is responsible for unreasonable withholding information, the fine is paid by that individual low-ranking civil servant. It could be £20, £50, $100. But something to concentrate the minds. I wonder if in the US that might go down, if that was applied under the UN legislation, the part of President Obama's new open government commitment.
Let me repeat that nice phrase that you used, Kevin, because it's often said, including by my dentist, that pain concentrates the mind. And you were making the point that ability in India for the national authority to fine the individual government employee concentrates the mind there. That's something that I think would be quite welcome by one half of the FOIA community in the United States. By that I mean to say the civil society groups. But on the other side of the fence, so to speak, it would probably not be welcome by government agencies for good reason, for good reason having to do with the nature of the beast to begin with. I can tell you that over the last few years, certainly I remember when I testified before our Congress in July of 2006, before I retired from government service, there was increasing attention on what are called here sanctions, or lack of sanctions. So if I were, let's say, a member of a public interest group here seeking to advocate along those lines to our Congress to strengthen those sanctions, you've just described exactly the example they would be looking toward, saying that there is now such a provision in India. It seems to work well. The government officials still manage to live a full and successful life, even though they're subject to being fined. And there is indeed some very worthwhile concentration of the mind, so to speak. So that's an excellent point that I think resonates here in the United States as well, speaking of comparative law.
I think one of the key things, of course, Dan, is that, people like Harry and myself, our job, of course, is to provide debt and sanctions and a degree of independent oversight of the actions of public authorities. So the whole point of having commissioners is that you have the ability to appeal against the decision of a public authority not to give you information to an official like myself, and to do that for free or for very little money without having to go to the courts, and the time that takes and the expense that takes. And again, that's not been something which has been prominent in the US legislation. And I suppose one thing I'd like to ask you and your people there is, do you think that's a model that might be becoming more attractive in the States, the idea of a quasi-judicial rather than a fully judicial means of dispute resolution?
Well, Kevin, I must say that you might be several thousand miles away and six time zones, 6 hours away, but you have put your finger right there with that question on exactly how we left our discussion after our keynote presentation by Professor Al Roberts just earlier this morning, because we were focusing on exactly the difference between an ombudsman and a commissioner and the value of a commissioner with respect to timeliness of adjudication, so to speak. And one of the points that was made, and I'm not looking to put you on the spot here or to get you in hot water with your English counterparts, Lord knows there's enough tradition of that tension to begin with, but if it takes a long time for the information commissioner in London or in Manchester to adjudicate a matter, and that's frustrating, it doesn't take you nearly as long north of the border, so to speak, in Scotland, does it?
No, you're right. The difficult the guess what I'll have been saying on these matters, because if you wouldn't speak regularly and meet regularly at various events, I'm not entirely sure why the White Scotland and England are so different on this issue. But what I do know as a commissioner is that I work very hard to recognise the point you made, Dan, which is that if we delay getting a decision to the applicant, often the quality of information, the purpose of making the request in the first place, is lost. The information has lost its value to the applicant, and the authority has won in a passive sense, and that even if they're forced to release it, there's no harm or no criticism comes to them because the news story perhaps has gone by. So we progressively brought down any time delay. Most of our decisions now are within 4 months on appeal, which is, of course, far, far quicker than it could ever possibly be if you went to a court in Scotland. And I think that is clearly the real benefit. And secondly, the vast majority of my decisions are respected by the public authorities. So my order release of information, we give it out. They don't take it to court. In only about 15 cases over the past 5 years have they appealed to the Court of Appeal of Scotland. So I think those are the dual benefits. But you're right, it could be a timely decision by the Commissioner, not one with a long delay.
We have an expression in the United States, and for all I know, Kevin, it's something that came from the UK originally, and that is justice delayed is justice denied, and you're making the point that in the same fashion, transparency delayed is transparency denied. I must tell you, though, by way of a warning perhaps, there is one major disadvantage of the expedition and the tremendous success that you've described in Edinburgh, and that is that you might start receiving more FOIA requests from Al Roberts, who has made many of them about the operation of freedom of information in the UK and has suffered tremendous delays in your counterpart information commission office there, and he did spend some time this morning speaking about that. So if Al suddenly decides to shift his academic research focus from London to Edinburgh and to take advantage, to get the benefit of your timeliness, you shouldn't be surprised.
Well, that's fine, but of course I'll have to expect no special privileges. They'll go to the back of the queue and make this request. But a serious note, I think there is a problem for academics in that I meet many government officials who believe that the kind of metadata requests that Al and others make about the operations of that exploration, rather than simply using the legislation to get information from public authorities, some of them regard that as illegitimate. I'd like to be clear as a commissioner, I have no problem with that. I think these are information requests for information held by the public authority, and it does as us as commissioners a service to have somebody monitoring the success or otherwise of our operations.
That's an excellent point, Kevin, and I think what you're saying is just as you would not give Al any favorable treatment with respect to whatever cue you have because he's Al, by the same token, you wouldn't disfavor him simply because he's making a FOI request about the FOI process in and of itself.
Exactly, yes.
Al has an addendum to that, I think, that he'd like to raise.
Could you ask Arnie?
I'm not 100% sure.
It's a short question. Okay. Could you ask Arnie and Kevin just to talk about what appear to be the emerging issues among commissioners and ombudsmen operationally, what appear to be the top two or three challenges they're dealing with?
Kevin, can you hear Al's question from the audience here?
I can, and I'll talk about to Arnie in a second, but I've been specifically making notes about that today because I've been quite stimulated by the presentations we've had, and I think for me as a commissioner, the major challenges I'm confronting are not on interpreting the FOI law as it applies to public authorities in Scotland. I think we've become quite experienced about that. The challenge I'm facing is the changing political landscape, which often means that FOI law is either unclear on its application or doesn't apply at all. So, for example, many of the public services in Europe, and certainly in the UK, and I've been delivered either by private or non-governmental bodies who are outside the scope of freedom of information legislation.
We would call them government contractors here, and we have the same problem, yes.
Yes, that's a major issue. So many of the requests I get, I'm not able to pursue the appeal. The second is an issue of information not held, where either the authority isn't creating information, for example, exchanging information between the blackberries of a government advisor and a government minister, and there's no record of that exchange being held in the government files because of the nature of that exchange. And the third thing is about where the policy-making mechanisms are now in the world. And again, they're often outside the scope of National Freedom of Information Act. They're made at the World Bank, they're made at the here in the European Commission, and either the FOI legislation is weak or the enforcement powers are weak. And so people are not able to get information about policies that are affecting their lives and their livelihoods. These are the real challenges facing us as commissioners, and that's what we're discussing at this conference.
Excellent. May I ask either you or Arnie, how many nations are represented by commissioners or their counterparts at the conference this time? Do you have a count?
40. Yes, about 40, I think.
That's a very healthy number, I would say.
Yes. Yes. Let me add something to what Kevin said about the issues we are discussing. Problems he mentioned, the private and non-governmental bodies we have that here in Norway, and about the no records problem, and the problem for people not having the information about the policy making of the government. Of course, we will have also problems concerned with, of course, connected with the mass of information that the government and the administration has a lot of information, and they will send it out, and it will be difficult for people to know what is essential, what is important, and too much information can also be a problem. Let me now also add a few words to the use of sanctions. The system here in Norway is very similar to that to other countries in Denmark, for instance. But different from the Swedes. Sweden is more advanced, so to speak. They have also a system of sanctions, and they have a law ensuring that the civil servants and the government officials will give information when they are obliged to do that. And they have some disciplinary mechanisms to enhance the freedom of information. So they have had the system since 1766, and it's rather sophisticated. And we sometimes say that we should look to Sweden when we'll find out how we shall solve a question of freedom of information. If the Swedes can do it, we should also be able to do it.
You know, Arne, that's a slogan that perhaps should also be adopted by any civil society advocates of sanctions in the United States. Because, again, if we can learn from the grandfather or the great-grandfather country like that, it also connects to something that we've been discussing this morning here, and we'll be discussing in even greater depth this afternoon, and that is the U.S. role in the international transparency community, because, of course, back in the early years in the United States, up and through even the 1980s, when we had still only six nations of the world, when Canada, New Zealand, an Australia joint. And for many years thereafter, the U.S. was looked at as the leader or with the model of Freedom of Information Act, where other nations were learning from us, learning from our mistakes. Now things have advanced to the point where I think it's very true to say that the United States can learn from other nations. The roles have flipped, so to speak. And that's something that's true with respect to new regimes, such as in India and Mexico, for example, but it's also true with respect to the original Freedom of Information regime, Sweden, as you very nicely outlined. Tell me, do you have someone from Mexico there?
Yes, we have people from Mexico, and the last intervention this afternoon was Jacqueline Pechard, president of the Federal Institute for Access to Public Information. She was talking about communication tools for information commissioners. They have started work on a project of giving better communication tools for the information commissioners. And she was telling us about where they stood today in that work. And she asked the participants of the conference here to support the work of the Mexican Institute, and some of the participants said that they would contribute. So we have a start here.
That sounds not only excellent in and of itself, but it sounds like exactly the type of thing that one would imagine or hope would be a product or a major feature of an international conference, a gathering of information commissioners. I'll tell you both, the reason I mentioned Mexico is because we do have some gentlemen in the audience, people from the National Security Archive, who, as a civil society group, have worked very closely with folks in Mexico as they've implemented their relatively new statute. And there are folks in the United States who say, very generally at least, that of all the nations of the world, the ones that seem to have the best transparency regimes are Mexico and India, perhaps. I wonder, without getting into best versus worst, so to speak, but is that something that you can sense as well from your vantage point as to which ones are working best worldwide?
I think it's difficult to make these judgments. We're often asked the question, who has got the best FOI Act? And it's one that we've not yet come up with a measure that we can affect globally and come to conclusions, both in terms of the quality of the law, but also the quality of the implementation of that law. And that's something that I know that, for instance, the Carter Center in Atlanta is working on, and we're happy to contribute to that. The one thing I can say about the Mexicans has been that they've been a dynamic contributor to the internationalism of FOI. Too many countries are focused almost entirely upon their national law and their national preoccupations. The Mexicans have always been, from the outset, great encouragers of international exchange and international initiatives. Something as basic like a safe space on a website that we can begin to exchange problems that we're encountering as commissioners and seeking help from what are still a relatively small number of international commissioners around the world who are sharing the same kinds of difficulties. So I think the Mexicans have done a great job both nationally and internationally. The Indians are also, of course, they have a federal commissioner and a number of state commissioners. And in a country as complex as that, again, they're encountering issues that they want to share with the rest of the world. And I can only applaud both of these nations for the lead that they've taken to try and encourage us to look beyond their own domestic circumstances and look more broadly. But we're also hearing, of course, from countries like Norway and in the States, that we're not solving problems that are decades old. Every new country believes meaning 40 years after the Norwegian legislation or the French legislation, the civil servants there still wish that some aspect of FOI didn't cause them to release information, and we're finding it very difficult to generate culture change. And again, I think that's one of the benefits of international exchange, is to say, how do we begin to advance the agenda if the experience shows that several decades on, things really aren't improving?
Well, if I'm sorry, Arnie, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No,
I was going to say that if any one element, which really at bottom has to do with human nature, has been a major force for good or bad in the United States, it's been culture change, both achieved and perhaps not achieved completely. And as we, for example, pull out of 8 years of one presidential administration for two terms, and that attitude towards secrecy and transparency into another, we're going through a little bit, at least, of our own culture change, even though we're more than 40 years out from our own Freedom of Information Act. And when you mentioned Mexico being outwardly thinking internationally, again, that is something that we're going to be focusing on later this afternoon, the ability of the United States now to likewise think internationally as we build upon the culture change and the policy change here in the United States so that we could play a greater role as we did in the past. So that's something that this exchange in and of itself today is a big part of, and it's an additional reason why we're so grateful for that. That wasn't a question, I realize. and I don't want to unduly impose on your gentleman's time, too. I do have one more question, then I think we might throw it out to our very well-experienced audience here of people who have, in the aggregate, several thousand years of experience, I suppose, in working with our own Freedom of Information Act. And that is, you might or might know that we have a new ombudsman under law in the United States. It's called the Office of Government Information Services. It was established by 2007 FOIA amendments, taking effect technically in January of 2008, but really only starting about 3 weeks ago with full funding at our National Archives and Records Administration. And I wonder, does either of you have a view, or are you aware of perspectives based upon what you've seen at the conference thus far about the value of an ombudsman as opposed to a commissioner? And Arne, I realize in asking that question, you are both an ombudsman and a commissioner in that sense, are you not?
Whatever you might say that, ombudsman is a Scandinavian or an old Norwegian word. One of the words we have exported to the world with slalom, ski, and some other words, skull.
I will not put you on the spot and ask you to rank those three in order of importance, however.
Instead of going to court, people
darn sure.
theory court is an expression we know from the United States.
I don't think that one. I do not think that one originated in the UK. Basic characteristic seems to be twofold. One, the ability to have oversight over the decisions of the various administrative bodies within the central or even local government and issue determinations with respect to that. And two, to have the flexibility to serve as an intermediary, so to speak, so it's not completely adversarial. And you gentlemen seem to capture the best of that world, that's for sure. I hope you don't mind, Arne, but when we have our vote here later on this afternoon as to what we think is the best system in the world, based upon what Alistair said about the UK and what Kevin said about the absolute relative speed, lightning speed of Kevin's office in Scotland, we probably will be voting Scotland rather than India or Mexico as the top of the list in that respect. Let me ask you, if I may, too, with respect to vote or outcome, do you plan to have a concluding, what would be the right phrase here, statement or policy or communique, for example, in a diplomatic sense, at the end of the conference, a common statement on which practically all commissioners can agree?
I must admit that sometimes this question comes up. There is no planning of such a statement due to the fact that the Nordic countries, the ombudsman of the Nordic countries, do not like to get involved in politics, and therefore the and such statements are often considered to be of political nature. However, we have been in the last years a bit more soft, but we have no plans about this. But you put an idea forward. So,
It's an idea, Arne, that does trace back to earlier International Conference of Information Commissioners, where I know there were statements. I think in the second and third ICs, and believe me, I'm not intending to imply in the least that would be any sort of a shortcoming or a limitation on the success of your conference. As a matter of fact, I will share with our audience here in Washington something that you might or might know, but that the United States has been, over the years, unable to join such a statement because invariably it includes the element, and this could be a matter of translation, that freedom of information, that right to know, is a fundamental right, a human right, so to speak. And as it just so happens, under our system of jurisprudence, the term fundamental right is a term of art. It's something that is of constitutional dimension. I'll put it that way because we are at a law school here after all. And our Supreme Court has ruled, for better or for worse, that there is no constitutional right to access in the United States. So, for example, when I represented the United States at the fourth ICIC in Manchester, I talked at some length with our State Department to see exactly what the U.S. position was, and indeed, we could not formally agree to any such statement because it probably would have that phrase, fundamental human right to information. But I know in other nations of the world, especially in Latin America, that is a major, a very big aspect of how they view transparency.
Propositions yet from the participants of the conference, but so that's the situation. However,
I dare say you will not be propositioned in that way or perhaps any other way by the delegate from the United States.
All right. Well, I think Oscar Roach and Melanie Pustay or Pustay, who is speaking to us tomorrow about the Obama Open Government Initiative. So there is clearly engagement with this conference. But you're right, Dan. I think many commissioners feel reluctant about coming up with a form of words or actually focusing this conference on a form of words. But many of us have also taken part in international gatherings which do result in declarations or charters. And yet, I think the notion of freedom of information or access to information as a right, whether or not a fundamental human right, is growing pace both in politics and in law. And I think that is the drift that is beginning to be captured, and increasingly therefore, from a practical sense, you know, seeing things like the World Bank, the OECD, and various international donors, looking for access to information as part of good governance in a country. So I think increasingly we can be comfortable signing up the statements which say we have an expectation that there will be freedom of information, whether or not entirely legally it's a fundamental human right. And the work has been done by the aforementioned Carter Center, both practically in places like Jamaica and in Africa, to improve governance and to strengthen access to information, but also to coordinate international expressions of support for that, are really quite welcome and quite rare. So I think the US is playing both a governmental and a civil society perspective, a leading role.
That's good, and we're certainly looking or anticipating for that role to increase with the passage of time as we move further and further away from the Bush administration and into the Obama administration, and very frankly, where the posture of the United States is improving on the world stage in general as well, as we've been seeing perhaps most vividly in recent weeks. I very much appreciate how much time you gentlemen have spent, especially Arne, with your fitting in between one thing and another your first day. I wonder, do you have a few more minutes where I could throw this out to our audience assembled here for a question or two?
Okay. Certainly, it has been rather interesting to have this contact. This is a rather new way of addressing a conference for me.
Well,
we are ready. Yes.
All right. I will tell you that we didn't attempt the more ambitious plan of having a video conference with you, because we thought that if we succeeded at the audio end as we have right now, that would be success enough and certainly unprecedented in the United States for celebrating International Right to Know Day. But I can assure you that if you have any interest, we would be interested in doing that as well in the future. Let me throw it out to our audience here. And I know there's one question right in the back row. The gentleman is so far away, I'm not sure whether your voice will be projecting across the Atlantic and to near the Baltic Sea. Yes. How about that? This, by the way, is a former president of our American Society of Access Professionals. We have two people who have held that position here in the audience today, or three. I lose count. Looking among the crowd here, it's hard to discern exactly who's here and who's not.
Commissioners, Will Ferrojaro at the Fund for Peace, a Washington, D.C. NGO,
My question is, do you have any attendees from countries recently coming out of conflict, whether they're officials or NGOs? And if so, are there any, what are the issues they're bringing up? Or if they're not in attendance, is there discussion at the conference of developments on FOI or the propriety of FOI in countries recently coming out of conflict? Thank you.
Well, can you give an example of the kinds of countries that you're thinking of?
Like Rwanda, for example, would that be one?
Right. There's a number of countries in Africa in particular. There are, of course, truth commissions in a variety of countries, and I'm wondering if there are any developments resulting from the advent of truth commissions, say, in Liberia and other countries, as to in any developments towards FOI.
Maybe it would be good if we could just get a sense to begin with. Do you gentlemen know offhand, I apologize for putting you on the spot here, how many nations from the continent of Africa are represented?
Well, not many from Africa. We have commissioners from the Balkans, from Kosovo, and we have also from other East European countries, but not the conflict countries that you mentioned. I think it's almost self-determining from that point of view, because this is, after all, a conference of the information commissioners. And many countries who are coming out of conflict who may be discussing having access to information or public participation laws will not yet have them enacted or not yet have appointed commissions or commissioners. So that's some way down the line, I think. One thing we have learned from South Africa and from countries like Malawi, who are also looking at legislation, is it's important not to focus on getting the best legislation in the world, and then looking around and saying, look, we've got no capacity to deliver on this. We don't have good archive or record management. We haven't got civil service on the ground to cope with requests. I think the best is sometimes the enemy of the good, and we need to find sound but pragmatic laws and procedures, and of course find the international donors to pay for that, and so it is a huge challenge. One that I know individual commissioners are often called upon to advise and assist and to be part of delegations, but we don't actually have a conference here which is focused on that, or participants who could provide experience to guide our discussions on that.
Kevin, you've just put your finger on something that also connects to what we discussed earlier this morning, and that is the number of nations who truly have legislation, and in one case, presidential edicts, that allow them to be counted as part of the international transparency community. And one of the things that our academic center does here is to vet those nations to come up with what we think is a very good, accurate count. By not counting nations that, as you say, might have something in their law somewhere, but as a practical matter, it's not a viable transparency system. By the way, I will mention that our count as of today, and we've just posted it at about midnight last night, is that we're up to 79. We think there are about three dozen nations that are poised to join the international transparency community, but our exact count, vetting them in that way as best we can, is 79, which means that if you have 40 information commissioners, you are, by the Collaboration on Government Secrecies count, over the halfway point, which is a major accomplishment in and of itself. There was, I think, one more question from the back of the audience. This is a gentleman who has experience in the Ombudsman's office in Pakistan, and is, you might or might know that the Washington College of Law has a very large international component. As a matter of fact, that probably grossly understates the case. So this gentleman here is a visiting Fulbright scholar at Washington College of Law from Pakistan. And let me ask you to pose your question, sir.
First of all, I would congratulate you and the commissioner for holding such grand forum. The The thing is that I was thinking that this freedom of information regime is a new phenomenon in most of the countries. Is there any plan before the information commissioners that they can establish a resource center which can devote itself for the capacity building of different information commissioner offices internationally so that the implementation of the law could be made easier?
Such as in Pakistan, for example.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, I think it's an aspiration that we do have. And thank you for the question. Indeed, the discussion this afternoon was precisely on can we establish the recognized website for international commissioners where we, for example, download all of our laws, we download the key decisions that were taken internationally as commissioners so that others can learn from that. So we can have an active discussion forum which will provide advice and respond to questions and will be a resource base linking to other international or even NGO actors who are part of that world. But to be an inescapable point that you go to if you were a new government wanting to set up an FOI Act. I know that my country in Scotland, what happened was they had to look to neighbouring countries like Ireland, to look to old friends like New Zealand and Canada and try to put together legislation as best they could. And there was no sense of a sense of excellence that would provide advice even to a fairly advanced nation like Scotland. So I think it's a great idea. The issue would be how much time and money it would take for set something up. But clearly that is the move of the conference here, is the move in that direction. So thank you for the question.
Well, thank you for that response as well. And I hope you now would be able to take this back to the remainder of your proceedings tomorrow and the next day and say that there's at least one member of our audience assembled here in Washington, D.C. on International Right to Know Day who sees tremendous value for that in his home country of Pakistan. So that speaker to which you referred earlier, who I think was from France, people are literally great minds thinking alike as to the value there. And I hope that in closing that you'll be able to, what would be the right phrase here, enhance international solidarity on this issue by when you open your second day of proceedings tomorrow, being able to mention to your assembled group that you were so kind as to participate in this program and that the celebration of International Right to Know Day has taken place in a truly international way.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It has been very challenging and interesting to have this conference. So thank you for taking the initiative.
You gentlemen have done more than meet that challenge. And again, you have our deepest appreciation, especially on this first day of what I know is a very busy time for you to have done so. And Kevin, I think I'll see you in Edinburgh when we have a program next March.
Yeah, I'll be working you to death. I've got you for 4 days, but I'll be non-stop work. So don't expect any pleasurable sightseeing for that.
I was about to say that I would be glad to reciprocate, but perhaps as a careful lawyer, I should be careful not to say anything further. Again, gentlemen, we're going to give you a big round of applause here from Washington, and please pass that appreciation on to your assembled group as well. Thank you very, very much.